extra spooky vibes.
Indeed, indeed. We are, 3 days away from, 4 days away from Halloween here.
Mm-hmm.
In the Chicago area, the trees are on fire.
Yeah.
Metaphorically speaking, the colors are beautiful.
The colors are beautiful. A lot of things are already switching over to Christmas time. I have a neighbor. He's got like an inflatable Santa. It's just laying in the front yard, deflated, like just waiting to pump it up.
Oh, my goodness. In all honesty, my mom would put up the Christmas stuff the day after Halloween. That's really? It's she needed 2 full months of Christmas action with her multiple trees. Multiple trees.
Yeah,
tree for every room.
I know all about that. Old,
and again,
not me personally. I like Christmas fine, but not like multiple trees.
I'm a Festivus man through and through. I got a Festivus pole here. That's right. Really what I celebrate.
Yeah.
Because I like to air grievances. This mm-hmm. is what we do in this show, right? We often air grievances about the films and shows that we're watching. Eventually, mm-hmm. we're going to get to some horror video games, I'm hoping, one of these days, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of which, I did want to mention, I'm most excited about a video game adaptation that's coming, Last of Us. That's like the number one buzzy horror I'm looking forward to. I know you used to play that game, right? I never had a PlayStation, so I never got to play it. But I remember you telling me you loved that game.
I love the first game. The second game was not as engaging. I don't know. It was good, just not as like.
Does it have its own like twist? Or is it just straight zombie apocalypse?
No. It does. And it reminds me a lot of the movie The Girl with All the Gifts.
The zombie movie.
So it's more of like a biological, an airborne disease that turns people into zombies, but they also, it's like a fungus, I think. So they also like start to sprout out like mushrooms, and it's really freaking cool.
Oh, that's interesting. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That show, the trailer.
What horror are you most excited for coming out?
That's a great question.
That's a tough one. I know I put you on the spot. You can think about it.
That's certainly up there. It's crazy that a lot of the times now that like horror television can really just, you know, get you more excited than the movies.
I know. I was totally full because a couple days ago I was just watching movie trailers, just doing that. So much stuff I didn't realize was coming out. And I almost got fooled. There was a Friday the 13th, like fan-made one. I didn't recognize most of the scenes in it. So I actually thought, oh, my God, is this happening? Did I miss this? I dropped the ball? And then, of course, when you look down at the comments, it's like, you suckers.
They do good work. They do good work with these fan films now.
They do. You know? Yeah, I mean, no joke.
So much so that they tricked you. Great production value.
I know we talked about what you're doing on the day of. You got any Halloween weekend plans cooking or?
Probably just consume more and more movies.
That's
what I do. I think we talked about this last time. We don't get trick-or-treaters in our building, you know, so I don't have to worry about that.
That's right.
So it's just like sit on the couch.
Well, I have some exciting news. I have a buddy who's invited me to a party, Mara, myself, and it's the Watcher themed.
Like
the invitation has like the house wants young blood. You know? Have you watched the Watcher yet?
Yeah. You mentioned it at the end of last week's episode, and then I cranked it out.
Nice. Well, I'm excited because, like, my buddy was allowed to bring people, I guess. So he invited us, and it's, like, in a super affluent neighborhood. So the house itself is going to be comparable to the house in The Watcher. And
What are you going to dress up as?
I'm going to be Uncle Fester, and the lady's going to be Wednesday in lieu of – that's the show I'm most excited about coming up. Horror-ish-wise, is Wednesday. So we're going that route.
Yes, in November. That looks cool.
And plus, with our watching so much House of Dragons lately, too, as I am Uncle Fester and she's Wednesday, we're thinking like a House of Adam sort of vibe, you know, with the
That's fun. That's a fun spin on it. Yeah.
Indeed, indeed. The inappropriate relationships that are on House of Dragons. that guy, he really, he likes his incest.
He sure does. Sure does.
Anyways, what we're talking about today is pretty much like all the horrors that we've watched kind of on our own. There's some overlap. And we're going to talk about, you know, what you should catch and what you might want to skip.
Right, right.
And disclaimers, there are some shows that I've started that I haven't watched that I could recommend or not just based on the little that I've seen.
Okay.
So let's start with The Watcher then. What was your take on it? We got Rose Byrne's husband as our lead. I'm a big Rose Byrne fan.
Bobby Cannavale. I've
stated that before.
Yes.
She's got this new Australian tourism ad where she's this adorable little CGI kangaroo with Will Arnett as like a unicorn, and they're showing Australia off. It's a fun travel, you know, pull for Australia. It's really interesting. Nevertheless, we also got Naomi Watts as his wife. And there are a lot of colorful characters surrounding it. Margot Martindale's one of the creepy neighbors.
Right. With her and her brother. No.
What? Oh, and of course we got Mia Farrow as another creepy neighbor.
Yes. That's what I was going to say.
And she hasn't been in anything for a minute. So I think the last thing she was in was The New Omen with Liev Schreiber. So it was good to and actually it was a very comparable role to this one. I love me some Mia Farrow.
I thought
the first episode catch you?
Yeah. I thought the first episode was certainly interesting enough. It pulls you in. It sets up a really good mystery. However, I mean, overall the show I thought was just fine.
Oh, all right. I thought it was a little more than fine, but I felt like the ending was the fine part. I like everything until the end because there's a lack of resolution. This is supposedly based on a true story, and also this is a Ryan Murphy production.
Yeah.
That's one thing I did want to say about it, is it is the first thing that didn't feel very Ryan Murphy-y to me.
I didn't
feel like all of his other stuff, even the stuff that he kind of ventures from straight horror into more like thrillery dramas. Those still kind of have a vibe of his own, and I felt like this really had like a different flavor to it. It didn't feel like him.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's probably because he can only do so much with the actual subject matter, because it's based off of real letters that were written and still have no conclusion, which, yes, can be frustrating.
Mara brought up a great point. So if, for those of you who haven't seen it yet, there is this creeper who's leaving letters in the mailbox for this new family that moved into this beautiful home. And supposedly generation after generation, it's been passed down to watch the home, protect the home. And it's very mysterious as to who is the one writing these letters. But why didn't they just put a camera in the mailbox? See who's putting in those letters.
That's a great call.
That would have made because the most
too
sense.
Easy. And it's funny because they spend so much money on their home security system. I think that to me was the most frustrating thing about this show is how much money they're just. Yeah. We know that they're having money issues and they're just throwing money left and right around.
Yeah, well, he thought he was going to make partner. That didn't happen. We're probably giving away too much. But for me, this is a watch. I enjoyed it enough just based on the performances alone. I totally dug it. I just loved the tone of it.
Yeah, I would say the characters are certainly very, I don't know, captivating. Maybe is a good word because they're
peculiar
they're
and unique. You know, I feel like it's almost characters like we haven't seen before.
Yeah, I would say it's almost similar to like Clue, you know?
Like
who's done it?
For sure.
Who done it. And I thought Richard Kind was hilarious.
Oh my God, great role for him. I was I won't give away much, but
yeah,
I'm not satisfied with what happened with this character.
Yeah. I did fly through it, like you said. You guys watched it like in a day, right? I flew through it.
It was very, very bingeable. It's funny because I saw Better Than Ezra recently at the House of Blues.
Yeah,
and that band called it out. They're like, "You guys watching The Watcher?" And then one of the guys did the voice. The house wants young blood. I used to do it really good. I've lost it, but nevertheless, let's move on, shall we?
Let's move on. Yes. I cranked out Midnight Club.
You cranked Mike Flanagan's, that out.
Yeah, Mike Flanagan's new series based on the writings of Christopher Pike.
Now, here's okay, all I, right. I'm glad to hear that you cranked it out because I'm only an episode in and I felt like it was very uneven. I really hated the beginning. And then when we get to the house or to I the, think, what do they call it? The
it's a hospice
house. Hospice. I really loved the vibe of the house. I thought some of the flashes of ghosts, I'm taking it because I've only seen the first episode, were a little hacky. But some of the kid characters really drew me in the middle. It's very rare that certainly a pilot, my favorite part is the middle. But that was the case because once they actually got around the round table, I was not enjoying the storytelling. And I'm a little worried that's going to be the bulk of the show.
The stories are a little all over the place. Something I had heard Mike Flanagan say recently is that the stories that they tell around the table are actually other Christopher Pike books. Like, I didn't know that they were, like, just truncated, you know, like, to fit in within these episodes. But, yeah, there's a really nice, like an arc to the first season. And, you know, it may be that it's skewed a little bit younger than us. Maybe we're not the audience. I thought the actors were really great and likable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'd give it a chance, finish it up.
Did you like it more than The Watcher?
Yes, I liked it more than The Watcher.
Okay, all right. That's a big deal then. All right, I'll follow through with that one. Because I was wishy-washy, and I didn't know it was Flanagan. So that changes everything.
Yeah, it's Mike Flanagan.
I missed his name, I guess, in the credits.
Yeah, he directed the first two episodes, and then there's other directors.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Another one that I only watched the first episode of is Pretty Little Liars: Original Sin. Do you know anything about this?
No. I mean, I know of it, but...
Yes, I didn't watch Pretty Little Liars. I gave it a shot. It wasn't for me. Let's just leave it there. I'm definitely not the demographic for it, despite the fact that it is aiming to do horror and use the Pretty Little Liars moniker. It wasn't up my alley. So that's going to be the first one I say straight up avoid if your sensibilities are comparable to ours.
Fair enough. That's good. That's a good, I probably won't even give it a shot ever. I noticed you put down Chucky. Now, have you been watching the TV show?
Okay. Yeah. I tried to watch it last year and I forgot about it. I completely forgot it was a thing that existed. And now I'm starting to really get into it. I'm about six episodes into the first season when the bully kid, the girl knows suddenly she's been attacked by Chucky.
Right.
He's burned down her house. It's really interesting and going in a direction I never would have expected a Chucky TV show to go in. And even though we have a majority of teenage actors, I feel like there's a good balance of it tackling more adult themes and issues. And certainly you got Brad Dourif as the OG Chucky's voice is there, which I think gives so much, you know, credit to it. You know,
absolutely.
It gives it so much more value than it otherwise might have had.
I think it speaks a lot that Don Mancini, it's his project. You know, he wrote the first movie, and I mean, I think he may have written all of them, but yeah, it's really you know, just another piece within the Chucky universe, and it ends up tying a lot of the movies together.
Interesting.
And then they put in Devon Sawa, who's
Devon Sawa. Yes, he was a very interesting looking young man, and he continues to be interesting looking, right? As an adult. I don't mind him. I think, and he played
like
double
him.
Duty
I
at
like
the top
him.
Where he's our protagonist's drunken father who's a mechanic
and
who's abusive
uncle.
To his gay son. And then he's the uncle who kind of takes over the guardian role. I don't mind Devon Sawa. I was happy to see him. And certainly this is his genre that he shines the best
in. Yes. Yeah, I'm caught up on the current season, which is out now.
Oh, wow. Was it season two as good as one?
Yeah. I think it's got a really nice, you know, you could be you could run out of ideas, certainly, when you've got a series like this. But they're on a nice path. I think it's still super entertaining.
That's definitely good to hear. And one of my favorite parts about the show is you actually get a sense of Charles Lee Ray growing up and kind of what turned him into the monster that then is voodoo transferred into this, you know, doll.
And the super interesting part about that is his real-life daughter, Fiona Dourif, is playing that part.
Oh, wow. I didn't
know that. That's his daughter. And that's why, like, she looks like a young Brad Dourif.
Interesting. Yeah, I think it's definitely worth a shot. I feel like, was there PR for it? It was one of those things that I don't feel like they've gotten out the word. I'm surprised there's a season two because I haven't heard anybody mention it ever.
Well, let me ask you this straight up. Do you have cable?
No.
Well, I think that's probably the reason why, because if you have cable, and it kind of gets annoying, but so many networks are owned by the same company. So you've got USA, Sci-Fi, they're the same. Yeah, and I think they run Chucky on both stations. It's kind of crazy. Mm.
Okay, but then that's where it's going. Which is kind of interesting. So it's kind of aiming for more of a mainstream audience than kind of the niche one that we are. Interesting.
I think season one did really well with the critics and the feedback. I think it brought in a whole new audience.
It's dealing with relevant issues while simultaneously having a doll stab people with syringes.
Yeah.
Take that, Stranger Things. I'm on board for it. I'm looking forward to finishing it. And to dig it into season two, I am curious where it's going to go for sure. So that's a big thumbs up. Have you heard of this 4-in-1 called 30 Coins?
Yeah, I've actually seen the pilot. No,
okay, stopped at the pilot.
It's on Netflix now. I believe it was an HBO project.
Was it HBO? You're right. It's HBO. My bad.
No, it's okay. It's an HBO foreign, like, is it Spain or is it?
I think it is Spain. I know the language is Spanish, but I dug it, man. It has some amazing creature feature in it. I was really impressed with what they do with the monster involved. And
I really liked the idea. I really liked this world that they started building. I didn't continue because it wasn't that I didn't enjoy it. It was just that there was just so many things I was watching at the time. I was like, I think I need to give this its own.
I went probably like, again, 5 or 6 episodes into it. And then I just forgot. It's one of those things where I was watching so much other stuff that it kind of like was no longer at the top of my queue. Yeah. And you got to be in the mood to, because I like to listen to the actual actors speak Spanish while I read the subtitles.
Yes.
So you got to be kind of in more of a mood to willingness to do that, being awake enough to do that too. So I was digging it. I think it's definitely, like you said, a really good idea. It's just a matter of, you know, digging back in if you can find the time to do it.
Yeah. I think it deserves that attention. And I don't think I was... You know, I was juggling so many shows when I first watched it. I actually think I watched the 2 episodes because it's a really
for
cool
fans
story.
Fans of Sense8, it has one of the actors from Sense8 in it, and he's great. It's the gay actor from Sense8. He's like, he's in this one as well. He's good. He's a good actor. Okay. He's a good performer. Gotcha. That you watched one of the ones that just dropped on Netflix, I think, last week, right? I haven't caught it yet.
Are you talking about The Cabinet of
Del Toro's?
Oh, my God. It's so good. It might be my favorite thing that we talk about today. So here's what's interesting. It's an anthology series, and the way they're rolling it out, they put out 2 episodes. I think it was this week. They put out 2 episodes, then they put out another 2 episodes yesterday. Now there's 2 episodes today. So there's only 8 total. So you're getting all 8 episodes within this week leading up to Halloween, and I have watched 3 episodes and loved it.
And it's an anthology, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And Guillermo del Toro is bringing in some really big feature film heavy hitter directors coming in. The actors are fantastic. The first episode is with Tim Blake Nelson, who you know from.
Nice.
Yeah. Yes. I mean,
Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Correct.
He was in that amazing movie, The Green Lantern, with Ryan Reynolds. Have you seen that one? That's so good.
I didn't even remember that he was in it. But he is so, so good. And this show is, I think the episode 3 you'd really like. It deals with an alien. But each episode is like kind of in a different time period too. I really like that they're jumping all around. Like episode one takes place in the 90s. Episode two takes place like in the early 1900s. And then episode three that I watched took place like in the maybe 60s. So it's a really fun collection of stories that are just all over the place. Very different, but really, really
You mentioned
fun.
Hard-hitting directors, but do they actually got a notable celebrities beyond like a Tim Blake Nelson? We love him.
Yeah.
We can recognize him by name, but what else we got? Hit me with who else was in it.
Yeah, so episode three had F. Murray Abraham.
Ooh, who, I love me some F. Murray Abraham.
Yeah.
Norm MacDonald used to be obsessed with F. Murray Abraham. He carried a picture of F. Murray Abraham around.
That's
with
crazy.
Him
in his wallet. And I love weird stuff like that. I did that as a kid. Had like pictures of celebrities that I really like looked up to. Weird. I don't know why I did it.
Oh my gosh, dude. As did I. I was known binder. As the kid with the wallet, because in my wallet, instead of, you know, he had the photo like folder thing, right?
Yeah.
Instead of folders or pictures of family members, what I had was top 20 lists of my favorite movies, my favorite actresses. And I would literally pass around my wallet in class
amazing.
With all these ridiculous lists.
Yeah.
And then collages of like the actresses next to the list. Absolutely absurd.
It's
no
I
wonder
did
my
stuff,
lunch money was constantly missing.
You kind of had that coming. That part was, but yeah, I was weird like that too. But yeah, F. Murray Abraham, who recently done he is in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as he was in the Oscar Isaac Moon Knight series.
Ah, yes.
As a voice. You know, and I'm not saying that you're getting like A-list actors, but you're getting amazing character actors. A-list character actors. So, yeah, there's a lot of people that you'll recognize, but you may not know them by name.
Fair.
But that's okay because they're just performances.
Oh, and notably F. Murray's going to be in the upcoming season of White Lotus.
Oh,
which
okay.
I loved that first season, and it's kind of horror in a societal sense. And also, okay. he's got a big part in Mythic Quest. Have you watched Mythic Quest?
I haven't started it yet.
Okay, I started it, and I wanted to like it more. Let's put it that way. I'm going to try and follow through at some point, but it didn't hit like I wanted it to hit. But so I'm hoping it grows into something a little bit better. As the gamer I am, I really wanted it to be something that it's not quite yet, but I could see the potential. All right, so I got to watch Cabinet of Curiosities. 100% I'm going to. I am excited about that one.
Yeah, I think it's like the perfect show for like the Halloween season.
Excellent, excellent.
Yeah.
Should we dig into some movies?
Let's do it.
I'm not sure if we've talked about some of these, but I definitely wanted to like note them before the year ran out.
Sure.
X, did you see X yet?
I have seen X, yes. And then I just recently watched the prequel, Pearl.
You watched Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that? It's on demand
you
or something?
You can get on demand. It's on demand.
Okay.
Right now.
All right. Yeah, I definitely want to see Pearl based on how much I did like X.
X is fun.
Yeah, it threw me for a loop. It was way better than you could anticipate. That being said, the previews for both X and Pearl are so slick.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Very stylized.
Yes, very stylized. I love the direction of Ty West, right? That's just... He's an auteur, kind of, in his own right. What do you think of our lead? She's an ex. Are you a fan of
Mia Goth?
Mia Goth, yes. That's her name.
Yes. And Mia Goth also plays Pearl.
Right.
And Mia Goth...
Which is strange, right? Because Pearl is the old lady in X.
Yes. But she also has another character in X. She's one of the other actors. So she plays two
parts. Right, yeah, she's the one.
X.
She's our final girl.
Yes.
Interesting.
Okay,
and
really
I heard that
like
they're actually
her.
Making a next one about what happens after X, the subsequent movie to
Perfect.
X, following her.
Yeah, I believe it. And it's a really fun collection of stories. I believe, and I don't know if Mia Goth was a co-writer on X, but she was a co-writer on Pearl. And I think she's super talented. I think she... could be a new generation Scream Queen, you know, I think.
Interesting. I think she's unique. I definitely, I'm curious to see what more she does.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'd say the whole cast of X is pretty darn decent, and certainly our elderly couple is pretty scary. They get the job done. You mind if I segue now into old people based on that?
Please.
Oh, my goodness. Have you saw it? You saw Old People. So it's a German film
dropped on Netflix. Really. I'm just kidding. I haven't.
Oh, my goodness.
Please tell me all about it.
Okay. So ultimately, you have this wedding that's going on. You got some tension between an ex who's going to be there, and the wife shows up with her kids, and they haven't seen each other for a while. That's all your straight plot. But then you got the old people's home that's very near this wedding that's going on. Okay. And I guess there's some sort of demonic imbuement in old people when they have been neglected or wronged in some ways. They get their vengeance. So ultimately, you have a old people's home just completely liquidated and all of them on the prowl to kill anything that's under the age of 65. And it is unlike anything I've ever seen, and really, really gruesome kills in it. And you don't expect who's going to survive and who's not, sort of thing. It really leaves you, you're going to be surprised at who makes it. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And it moves so quickly. And if you're willing to watch a foreign horror, I would say Old People's is definitely for you. I think you're going to dig it. It's its own thing. And the metaphor behind it is so great, because really we do treat the elderly so crappy that
we do. Terrible.
It was rife for some sort of horror project that kind of utilizes that reality. And this one does a really good job. I wouldn't be surprised if it was remade for
Americans
who aren't willing to watch foreign. But yeah, it was very cool. The setting is amazing too. You really get a sense of the German countryside, and I don't know. It's kind of like a reverse Hansel and Gretel situation.
Oh, that's fun. And you're saying that's a Netflix movie?
It is on Netflix, yes.
Okay.
Yes, Old People. Pretty sure it's fairly new.
Tell me about the Munsters.
Did you not watch it?
I did not watch it because I don't know if I want to anymore.
Okay, I got 3/4 of the way through before I fell asleep. I do intend to finish it. I tried to just acquiesce to it, tried to just relinquish myself to it because of how much I love Rob Zombie, but it is a very, very strange project for him. The only thing I can kind of make heads or tails of why he would go this route is because it was a nice vehicle, I guess, for his wife. I love Sherry Moon Zombie. She's always interesting to watch, but the script, I mean, I did watch the Munsters as a kid. I remember watching a few of them. It wasn't something like that was my go-to at all. I don't know how much I loved it either. And this, I would say, is worth a watch only for the visuals. It is so like eye-popping. The script is just absolutely like so stupid. It's pretty much about how they met and how they came to be a couple. And the guy who plays the main Munster, our main Munster guy, I can't remember his name, the Frankenstein-looking dude.
Herman
Munster, thank you, is really good. He nails mimicking the OG, especially with the laugh. If you're in a mood for something goofy, I could say even put it on in the background while you're doing something else.
And
you'll be satisfied, but... certainly not what I want Rob Zombie to be doing, I guess.
Yeah, that to me seemed more of like a project that like Tim Burton should have done.
I could see that.
So even when they announced this, I was like, unless you're going to take this to the extreme of like House of a Thousand Corpses, I don't think we need this.
No. And there's really no gore. I mean, it's all just goofy. Doesn't feel like Rob Zombie. It's just goofy is the word. It's just a really goofy, colorful movie. You got Hurley from Lost in it as Igor. So it's a strange cast and a strange movie as a whole. I'm probably going to finish it. Yeah, I think I am.
I think I am.
What the hell is Deadstream? You got Deadstream on your list and never heard of this.
Okay, so this is a relatively new movie that's a Shudder original that cracked me up. This is a horror comedy, and I really just loved the tone. It was smart. It's about a YouTuber, although, you know, he's got his own platform. They reference YouTube. It's not completely like, we can't use that. But he does this live streaming stuff. He would be the equivalent of like the guys on YouTube, the type of people who go and they do like a gimmick just to get you to watch. Like, so this is about a guy who's trying to rebuild his audience because he's done something to really piss him off. He had to do an apology video. So he decides to get his numbers back. He gets a new sponsor. That's like this energy drink. And he decides to stream spending the night in a haunted house. Mm. And it, you know, it goes awry. And like, this place is really haunted. And I really thought that this, I think the lead, I'm pretty sure, is also the writer and director. I think he wrote it with his wife. And I think that they are really talented. I think he has like this Bruce Campbell-esque, even though his character isn't like as macho as a Bruce Campbell, but he plays into the horror and the horror comedy really well. I wouldn't be surprised if it like is something that inspired this movie is Evil Dead 2. And it's just a really fun horror movie, and it flies by. Really good effects. Yeah, you got to check it out.
Okay, yeah, that definitely sounds good. I hadn't heard of it. Is it on the Shudder front page? Because I actually popped on there recently.
Yeah, I think it's a hand, like a grotesque hand holding like a GoPro style camera.
Oh, okay. All right. So kind of comparable to our logo, just with a camera.
Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice.
Also, to segue, the husband-wife duo have their own segment in VHS 99, which just came out and like broke Shudder's records for like,
really
premiere. Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
And you watched it? How was it?
I watched VHS 99 as well. I don't know if you're familiar, like have you watched
the VHS? I am familiar with the first one.
Yeah. The found footage tapes, you know.
Right.
VHS 99, I think is that because they recently put out VHS 94, I believe. This one is a little bit more fun. There's a little bit more humor to it. Really leans into like the late 90s. Like there's a segment that's really funny about it's almost like remember Legends of the Hidden Temple, that show?
Yes, for
that
sure.
That meets Double Dare. There's like a segment where like there's a girl who's competing on that, and the host.
That sounds cool.
Does the wrong. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. And then the last segment is the, I think it's called To Hell and Back, and that's the same writer performer from Deadstream. Also very funny.
All right. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to catch that. Obviously, with the VHS series, there's no continuity.
It's all about jump cuts. You know, found footage, like as if you know, like you used to do with a VHS tape, is that you would tape over stuff. So you've got like some weird stuff taped over, and it's just a fun
franchise. I know all about that. Did you ever do that? You had the two VCR set up, and you rent the Big Lebowski, and then
you
make yourself a copy of it.
I was not as good about that, but I would tape everything on TV, and then I would just tape over the same tape, and then it just gets worse and worse. The quality gets bad.
See, I couldn't take the commercials. I couldn't do that. I would go to Pyramid Video and grab the actual cassette.
That's great.
About the elder days with Black Phone, because we've both seen this. Did we not talk about Black Phone before?
We may have touched on it. I think we certainly didn't do a whole episode about it. I know that much.
Okay. Because it's not worthy of a full episode, if you ask me. Really pumped for it by the preview, but I found it very disappointing, yes.
I also think that people really hyped it up. I wanted to like it so much more. To me, it didn't feel like a horror movie. It felt more like a thriller, like a suspenseful thriller about just a kidnapping. I thought the movie – did you ever see the movie with Hugh Jackman called Prisoners?
Sounds familiar, but I don't think so.
Yeah, it's about a kidnapping. I thought that was way more terrifying because it felt like more of a real kidnapping than this movie. I think it was fun. I mean, there are elements of it. I think that Ethan Hawke's performance was really entertaining.
Yeah, the mask is scary. The one scene where he's just waiting up there on the chair, that's like the only good scene, if you ask me, in terms of horror.
Yeah,
just him waiting there and falling asleep. And is the kid going to try and escape? Otherwise, and
a little predictable, right?
Yes. It did not bring anything new to the plate. Like Mr. Harrigan's phone attempts to, but fails miserably as well.
Oh, man.
This one I'm mostly familiar with because I read the short story compilation by Stephen King. So I read this one and I didn't love it to begin with. It's an interesting concept about, this old man who has the capacity to text this kid.
From beyond the grave, right?
Beyond the grave that he was chill with. And the kid would do a bunch of little things for him, and then ultimately anything the kid would text that he wants, then somehow this old man, Donald Sutherland, who...
It's kind of like a Tuesdays with Maury, but like beyond the grave.
The horror version of Tuesdays with Maury. But ultimately, it's not scary. There's nothing redeemable, I would say, about it at all. I would say skip it entirely.
Yeah,
I love my Stephen King, but this is based on just a short story of his, so... Yeah. I don't think there's enough meat on the bones to turn it into a good enough movie, like they attempted. Super skip.
Disappointing. Sorry, everybody. We both watched the new Hellraiser.
Yes. Finally, something we can talk about that I actually really liked.
Did you really like it? Yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. I thought they did a really good job of. Which seemed like almost like an impossible task to bring not only the franchise back, but, you know, reimagine your Pinhead character.
Make it, what do you call that, cohesive, like comprehensible, too. Because the first one, I don't know, I watched it maybe 10 years ago for the first time.
Yeah.
I found it really hard to, like, understand. Like, it was so convoluted to me, I just couldn't really get the premise enough. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't consider myself a Hellraiser fan until this movie, because I thought it really had some horrific moments of note.
Yeah, I mean, body horror to the max, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Goran Vizhnik, his like weird grinding thing inside his chest after he gets... And just like, was that the case? Was there different sort of orientations of the box, of this Pandora's box thing in the first one? Did it have different...
No, not that I remember. I think it was just the
That's kind of the new angle they went at with this one, where it does become kind of like a chain link thing again. It becomes like chain link horror, where you gotta kill somebody to survive sort of thing. Pass it on.
Right.
Which I dug. There's one scene that I thought was amazing. It takes place in the van. They're trying to get away, but this girl has been, you know, stabbed by the box, and the back of the van like is just supernaturally stretching out. So she's getting kind of sucked into this hell dimension while the van is still moving. That was one of the coolest visuals I've seen in a long time in horror. That caught me. That alone, I think, is worth watching it for, because it did something super new. What about the Cenobites? Are you scared by these guys?
Well, as a kid, I was. I mean, maybe even more so than Pinhead. I thought they, you know, they did a good job of trying to bring in some like new visuals to them. But overall, I'm glad they were there. They could have taken this in a completely different direction, but.
And to see how a Cenobite is made, the lore of that I thought was really cool too. I just thought like they looked at the first one and like, what can we do that would help this make sense and build upon it? And I felt like it was done well. I mean, it's not Shakespeare by any means, but it kept me interested, and I liked the characters a lot for the most part. I mean, they're a little stock. But at the same time, performances were decent enough, and I should have realized. I think at the beginning, I kind of knew who was the one that was going to be traitorous.
Yeah, that's
But at the same time, sometimes it's good to know a little bit of where it's going to go. And this is one that I think is definitely worth a watch.
Agreed. And I really think that they could even do so much more, and like with some sequels. And I think this is a good example of taking a body of work, you know, from the 80s that a lot of horror fans love. And I certainly don't think they did anything that pissed anybody off, which happens a lot.
That's a good point. Yeah, they did not ruin the IP in any way.
Yeah, and I think that they need to continue with it and see where they can build this out. And like,
well, they got to bring back that Chatterer. I was a little pissed off when that Chatterer bit the dust.
Oh, like, yeah, yeah.
It was so interesting that they went that angle that you can actually curse one of the Cenobites, but that Chatterer is like the scariest one. So I want him back, damn it. It's like part xenomorph sort of in his head. I just dug it. And I love like puzzles, you know, scary puzzle stuff is always good in my books.
Sure, sure. I liked how that movie...
Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I really liked how that movie kicked off with the guy at the party who's like...
Amazing
snooping
teaser.
Around. Yeah, yeah.
100%. Yeah. And I actually, you know, drug use in films can be done wrong, but I felt like this girl, the reason that she is all messed up when she sees the visions of the new Pinhead, is this like new Pinhead? It's not the same Pinhead, right, as our first
new
one?
New Pinhead, right.
It's a new Pinhead, yeah.
Pinhead, the original Pinhead is played by Doug Bradley, and...
Okay. Oh, yeah, this, I know the act. I'm just, it's not attempting to be that same character.
Oh, interesting. I think it's probably, yeah, different. Okay. I don't know. Yeah.
Because, I think that's a fair obviously assumption. The leader of them all. But, yeah, I dug it. I thought it was super, super gruesome. Mm-hmm. And everybody dies. You gotta love that.
Yeah, that's a good horror movie right there. That's
total opposite in the end of the horror spectrum is Hocus Pocus 2.
I haven't watched
lady
it.
Lady make you watch it? No.
No.
Okay.
She watched it with her friend. I didn't get to watch it.
It's disappointing. Yeah. The first one I really liked as a kid, but I didn't remember it. So I kind of half watched it again recently. There is one scene with Penny Marshall and Gary Marshall where the witch thinks he's actually the devil. That is it's so funny. It's like,
it's so funny.
It's the
and
best
also
part of the movie. It transcends
so
time.
Weird.
Too.
Like you cast a brother and sister to play a husband and a wife in a movie. That's like always weirded me out, but he is so funny in that role too. Like he's like a spandex devil costume. Yeah. And they're dancing.
And Penny with the curlers in her hair, yes, just getting fed up with Sarah, yes, Jessica hitting on him. It is so funny. And there is nothing in the new one that comes even remotely close to that moment. I feel like in this new one, they had a lot of potential and that they could have capitalized on that was squandered. For one instance is they're walking to a house and then they hear Alexa and they think, oh, it's a tiny woman. There's a tiny woman here. But then they don't capitalize on it. That's all they leave it at. And I don't know. I was left.
Yeah, that could have been a great callback or a great runner throughout.
Exactly. Know? It was underwhelming. I will say the highlight of it, though, is Tony Hale. He's the mayor of the town. And he's the funniest part of the movie, probably. But that being said, it's a few tiers below the OG.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's a shame. Gotcha. It's a shame. Did you not catch They Them yet?
No, not yet. Now, They Them is the Peacock original with Kevin Bacon, right?
With Kevin Bacon, yeah. About a conversion camp. And I was really excited when I saw the preview for this one because I thought it was rife for a really solid horror. But it wasn't very good. I'm sorry to say that it was very lackluster and similar to the Hocus Pocus 2, missing opportunities. I felt like this missed some, and I felt like the production value of it was really kind of shoddy. And also, I understand, I appreciate we got LGBTQ horror cooking in here. There was just scenes that were too long. Also, I just felt like the direction was off. The script was shoddy. it was problematic at times too, in trying to obviously advocate for LGBTQ. And then it was not finding a balance. I felt that worked. Kevin Bacon was Kevin Bacon, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't suggest you see it unless
that's
you got kind a lot of why time I haven't.
It's kind of why I haven't. I had heard, you know, the initial feedback when it came out, and like usually I don't let stuff like that discourage me because, you know, it's really easy to just, you know, push something aside. But it was also like right there. It's very accessible. It's there on Peacock, and it's a new movie. And I just didn't do it.
I guess for me, my biggest issue was the people that die. I'll deserve it. It was almost like moralistic. A good horror, you know, you got to have people die where you're like, shit, no, that's horror to me is when innocents are slaughtered, you know. But in this one, everyone that gets their just desserts actually deserves it. And they're horrible. So in that sense, there's nothing scary about it. And that's, you know, a bummer.
That is a bummer. That is a real bummer.
And then finally, I guess I'll just mention Crimes of the Future because I haven't finished it yet. But yeah, of course, we got a Cronenberg film on our hands here, and he's been away for a minute. I don't think I was in the mood for it when I was watching it.
You really have to be when you're watching a Cronenberg film, father or son.
Because I recently rewatched Videodrome, and James Wood be damned, that is a really, really great movie. I know what Cronenberg can do, and I feel like the concept here is just like too heady. It's not going to be at all accessible for people. Just the idea of sexual pleasure from like mutilation in your body, and then also we got a future where you're able to grow new organs. Conceptually, it's a lot of fun. Sure. Visually, it's a lot of fun. It's just one of those things where it feels so detached from reality that you can't really glom on to any character and give a shit about what's happening to them because they feel like cartoonish, you know? Sure. But if you're a Cronenberg fan, you got to watch it. And I'm definitely going to get through the whole beast and hopefully be in the mood for it to enjoy it. Like I enjoy most of his fare. And, you know, Viggo's great. I know I'm in the minority, but I do like Kristen Stewart, whatever. I think she's interesting in this too. She's doing a character she doesn't normally do. But yeah, I'm not surprised it kind of just fizzled and everyone kind of forgot about it.
Yeah, there's just a lot to watch right now, and like, I don't know what type of release it had. Was it straight to streaming?
I'm not sure about that either. I think there was a minimum release or theatrical release, but
yeah, that's the
problem. I think I watched it on demand a while ago, a couple months ago now.
Yeah,
but I think you got to watch it for sure. Just visually, it's unlike anything. It's kind of close visually to Existence in a way. Of course, it's body horror, but that's the one I would compare it to of his former films more than anything. But
yeah, I'll definitely check it out, especially when we're like in November when there's not as much horror to watch.
Yes. Yeah, that touche. But yeah, that's all I got for you.
Yeah, I think I think everybody needs to go and check out Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities.
Yes,
I think
I'll probably watch an episode tonight.
Yeah, I think it's like the perfect thing for Halloween right now. And I could see them coming out every year, like around this time, you know, with a new. It feels very much like Old Tales from the Crypt because it's Netflix. They can do a little bit more than, say, American Horror Stories. So
for this season. Reminds me, did you ever see that one that came out, I think, maybe last year? Stories to Tell in the Dark? That film where it has like to Tell in the Dark. Yep. Did you see that one?
Yeah,
What's the scoop on that? Because that's one that I recently remembered, but I missed it for some reason.
That was visually really cool, really great practical horror. Like the monsters and creature designs were done by a really cool company. There's a really fun featurette you can find online of them creating those monsters. I just think the stories didn't really, you know, hit as like as scary as they could have been. But maybe it was because it was for the younger generation.
Right.
That was a book
series I remember as a kid reading
loved.
That one about the spider impregnating the face or whatever.
Yeah.
That that got me as a kid. But
just thought it was a pimple and like pops it and all the spiders right. come out. Oh,
I don't like any of the pus stuff. It brings us back to that American Horror Stories episode.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Anyway, I hope everybody has a amazing, safe Halloween season.
Indeed. Watch out for those razor blades in the apples.
Don't check your apples.
Chucky. That first episode, like he just chomps right into that apple with the blade on purpose. He's a maniac
indeed.
But to our beloved audience, stay alive.